We are in Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Zayin. Page 208. In the Old Testament. The story up to now. Basically, Yehuda was deposed from the brothers because they blamed him for the mechira, for the selling of Yosef, and he went to this place and he got married to a woman called Bashua. She gave birth to three kids, Er, Einan, and Shela. As we discussed, who had the rights to the first name, second name, the third name, and so on. In Pasuk Vav, we learned that Yehuda took a wife for Er, his firstborn. And we learned the expression, why does the Torah say that Yehuda took the wife? Because Er at this time was 7 years old when he got married. He did it young. So he was too young to take his own wife. So therefore the Torah says Yehuda took a wife for Er, and her name was Tamar. Now who was this Tamar? We started discussing last week. She was either the daughter of Shem, Noach's son Shem, that according to this, she had to be at least 67 years old when she married the 7-year-old kid. What a shidduch. 7-year-old boy with a 67-year-old lady.
If she was wealthy. Huh? Was she wealthy?
She was, must have been wealthy. Okay, and that's the story so far. So in Pasuk Zion it says,
either that or what? You said,
oh, or else she was a granddaughter of Shem.
In which case she was old?
No, then she could be much younger. She could have been his age. Okay. Vayihi Er Yehuda, Bechor Yehuda, Er, the son of Yehuda was Ra b'enei Hashem, evil in the eyes of Hashem, Vayimiseo Hashem, and Hashem killed him. Now, Rashi says, what was the sin that Er and Einan did? Basically, they didn't want to ruin Tamar's beauty, so they didn't produce seed into her, they wasted the seed. And because of that, it was basically the concept of capital punishment, of mitzvah b'dei shemayim, and the Mefarshim explain that that's why it says, Er b'chor Yehuda rabbe inei Hashem. Because there's a number of questions over here. Normally, the heavenly Beis Din doesn't punish you until you're 20 years old. You don't get punished by the heavenly court until you're 20. So the question is, if the kid is 7 years old, why in the world is he getting punished? And also, thank you. Why does the Torah also mention that Er was the firstborn of Yehuda? I mean, the pasuk before it says Yehuda gave birth to Er. So obviously, we know he's the firstborn. And the answer is, this explains why his sin was so criminal. Because royalty was going to come from Yehuda. So Er had the opportunity of having this royalty if he behaved properly. That his kids would have eventually produced royalty. So therefore he was punished even more severely because he was should have known better. Or, as the other Mefarshim answered, that because these Shvatim were so great, these people were so great, they were punished even under the age of 20. Just like they were so intelligent, so to speak, to get married at 7, so therefore they had the intelligence and maturity of being punished at the age of 7. But the pasuk here by Ed does not say what the evil was. Okay? But Lepel, the pasuk will soon say. So Vayema Yehuda Le'enan, so Yehuda said, now that the heir died, so Yehuda said to Einan, Be'aleshes achicha, go marry the wife of your brother, ve'yabim Esa, and do yibum, ve'hakim zera la'achicha, and you will produce children for your brother. Because Rashi says, okay, let me explain this concept of yibum. And it's very important to understand it now, because we have to understand the ramifications of Yehuda over here. There is a pasuk in Chumash that says, if a person passes away without children, the brother has to marry the wife. If he doesn't want to marry her, you do what's called chalitza. Chalitza is a whole process. There's a story with a shoe, and you have to undo the shoe, and she spits, and the whole process which permits the woman to remarry. Which means, a woman whose husband dies, and they don't have any children, God forbid, that woman is forbidden to remarry. Unless, if she either marries the brother-in-law, the husband's brother, if there is. If there is no brother, let's say an only child is married and dies and without children, so there's obviously no din of yibum, then the woman could remarry. But if there is a brother and who's alive, and the brother, this present brother died without children, the brother either has to marry her or do chalitza with her.
What if the brother is married himself?
In the times of the Torah, there was no problem because they had many wives.
And now?
Now,
you
still have to do chalitza anyway. Nowadays, we only do chalitza. Nobody does yibum today. Because there's a lot of technicalities in the intent of yibum and so on. Now, Rashi says over here, and many mefarshim have a big problem with Rashi's comment. Rashi says, as the pasuk says, Yehuda says to Einan, go marry your sister-in-law, v'hokim zera lachicha, and you will create children for your brother. What does this mean? So Rashi says, because when the brother marries the girl, the widow, and they have a child, the first child is called on the name of the brother who died. The Rambam writes, it's not true. You don't have to call him. And we see by Boaz and Rus, later on when Boaz married Rus and they had a child who was also Yibum, and still they didn't name the kid on the deceased parent's name. But they say Rashi doesn't necessarily mean the name. Rashi means the concept that this child is taking the place of the parent. Today, again, like we said, they don't do yibum; they do chalitza. But without chalitza, the woman would not be able to remarry anybody else.
How's the child taking the place of the father?
Well, Rashi says, "What?
He's from a different father."
Yeah, I understand, but it's still. It was the wife's first husband. So Rashi said they would even call him on the name.
It can be that the girl is born.
But, huh?
It happens that the girl is born.
If they give birth to a girl, so they would, again, halachically, Rashi is not discussing halacha. Rashi in Chumash is pshat. Rashi is not halacha. According to halacha, you don't have to name the child based on the father. Yehuda is telling, in simple pshat, Yehuda is telling him, marry the girl and have a child, and it'll be called on the brother's name. He'll carry over in the tradition of the brother.
But the child is or she. Does he still have the neshama of the brother?
Some people say that the neshama comes in, some people say it doesn't come in. Whatever, that's the soul things.
And this is where we learn this
thing. Well, we don't learn out there. We learn it out from after Matan Torah. The Torah says clearly. Now, the Mefarshim point out that this is the first time that a child died in the patriarch's house without children. This is the first case of Yibum. Yet, as we see clearly, Yehuda knew there was a concept of Yibum. Now, Yehuda did learn Torah, and he understood, even though it never happened before, that somebody died childless in the patriarch's house, not Avram, not Yitzchak, you know, not this. Nevertheless, Yehuda understood the halacha, and he knew what it was supposed to be. Okay, so he says, go and establish children, and as we said, it doesn't mean that necessarily they have to call out the name, it means that it basically takes the place of the father. Some people say, that Ramban in different places say, that the neshama becomes reincarnated in the child, and so on and so forth. Now, they bring down over here that even before Matan Torah, the great people like Yehuda understood the concept of Yibum, what the purpose of Yibum is, and why he did it. Before Matan Torah, though, it's interesting. Before Matan Torah, Yibum was any close relative. It didn't have to be a brother. Now, I just want to explain something. A brother-in-law is one of the adulterous relations. I'll give you an example. If a man died, and he had children, the wife is not allowed to marry her brother-in-law. And if, yeah, it's adulterous, it's mamzer, and so on, the kid would be a mamzer. A brother cannot marry his brother's widow if there are children. If there's no children, it would be a mitzvah of yibum.
Yeah.
But if there are children where the mitzvah doesn't apply, it's biblically forbidden to do it. It's adulterous, it's capital punishment, plus the kid would be a mamzer, and so on and so forth. Before Matan Torah, as we'll soon see, Yehuda did yibum with Tamar. Yehuda himself, the father-in-law, did yibum with the daughter-in-law, which is normally not allowed after Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, it's only the brother-in-law, not any other relative. But in this case, as we'll learn later, Yehuda did yibum with Tamar.
But unconscious.
What?
He did it unconscious.
He did not know this is Mrs. Tamar.
We'll learn if he did know or didn't know. Simply, he didn't know, but it's not so simple. Okay. So, Pasuk test, Vayeda Einan Nu, Ki Loi Yi Azarat, that the child won't be considered his, because the Grashi is going to be called on the name of the deceased. And he said, Vahoyan it was, Imbay, El Eisha Sachiv, when he would be with his brother's wife, he says, Vishiches Hartza, he would waste the seed that it should go on the ground. The voting son Zed al Achiv not to give seed to his brother. Rashi says that they didn't want to ruin her beauty. They didn't want her to become pregnant. That was Er's thing. Er didn't want her to become pregnant to ruin her beauty. So Hashem killed him. Einan said, I'm going to have a kid with her and it's going to be called on the father's name. I'm not interested in doing that. So what happened? So it became bad in Hashem's eyes what Einan did. Vayomaz gam eisei, and Hashem also killed him. Now, why does the Torah say gam eisei? It should say vayomaz eisei, Hashem killed him. So the interpretation teaches us gam means, why did he kill the first one? For the same reason he killed the second one. Because the first one, it just says he did bad and Hashem killed him. It doesn't say what he did. By the second one, the Torah says what he did. So the Torah says, and that's the reason also for the first one. They wasted the seed.
Oh.
They didn't put it into her, they wasted it on the ground.
But by the second one, he gives two reasons.
No.
He wasted it, and he didn't want his brother to have it.
That's why he wasted it. It wasn't two different things. He wasted it because he didn't want that she should get pregnant, and the kid should be called on the first guy's name.
And how do we know that the first one? But that's not the same reason for the first one. The first one didn't want to ruin her beauty.
But it still wasted
action
it.
Action was the same.
Right.
The reason wasn't the same.
Well, the punishment was for the action.
He didn't want children.
The first one didn't want children. He didn't want her to become pregnant to ruin her beauty. The second one did it because he didn't want to have a kid called on the first name. But they both did the same thing. They both wasted the seed, and therefore they were both punished. So Vayemer Yehuda. So, Yeah, she was probably very pretty.
But the relationship didn't continue, Rabbi. It finished.
Hashem killed him right away. You can't stay married with a dead person. Yeah.
How does Rashi know?
The slight problem.
How does Rashi know that the first one has a different reason? It's in the pasuk itself, right? The pasuk gives the reason, but how does Rashi know that?
Because Rashi explains the Siv Zechom said, why else would he want to do it? That would be a reason why he didn't want to have kids. It wasn't because he wanted to go on vacation to Hawaii and didn't want the kids to be underfoot. Vayemer Yehuda l'Samar kalasei. So now Yehuda said to Samar, his daughter-in-law. He said to Shvi Amana Beis Avich, I want you to go back as a widow in the house of your father. Meaning, as Ramban says, what do you mean go back as a widow? Of course she's a widow. What, did she go back as a married woman? It means, I want you to keep wearing your mourner's garments until Shela, the third son, is of marriageable age. Why? Because Yehuda didn't want anybody else to marry her. So the widows in the olden times, the Ramban says, the widows in the olden times wear their mourner's clothing until they were ready to get married again. Then people knew that they were available. Yehuda didn't want Tamar to marry anybody else. He wanted to keep her in the family because she was a very great woman. So Yehuda says to her, I want you to wear mourner's clothing until the third son, Shelah, is ready to marry you.
What made her listen to him?
She was a great woman.
And by now, Rabbi, she's over 7 years old?
Yep.
That's one of them.
She lived very long.
Why'd you have to wait for Shelah to grow up if the other ones married her so young?
Oh, what's that? But it's seemingly at least a year or two. Right.
6 months.
Well, we're soon going to see what happened.
But
yes.
Anyways, they didn't want to put their clothing into constantly wearing black?
Whatever color they wore.
But it wasn't just one, obviously it wasn't one garment for the many years.
I hope not.
You don't know what color it was?
I mean, in old tradition, it was black.
Okay, let's say even if it was different set.
In old tradition, it was black.
He said it twice.
Yeah, the same.
Except Shabbat.
So Shabbat, she probably wore a strimal. Probably was black.
So they every day they kept on wearing black?
It was a fashion. What do you mean?
What's the big deal?
Seems a little bit cruel.
She was 70, who cares?
Anyways, he ended up not giving Shayla to
one her. Second, we didn't get there yet. Until he... Now, what does it mean? Ki yigdol Shayla. Now, Gadol means 13. That means Yehuda didn't want her to marry the guy Shayla at the same age, 7, like the other two did. Right? So what happened? Yehuda says to her, I want you to wear your mourner's garments until the kid grows up and becomes bar mitzvah, that he should have a better understanding of what he's doing. But the truth is, Yehuda didn't intend her to marry Shelah. Why? Because Yehuda was afraid, just like the two first brothers died, maybe Shelah's also going to die. He didn't want to have three kids dead.
Why did he make her wear the mourner's clothing if he had no intention?
Because he wanted to, well, we'll soon see.
How could she have any children at that age? Anyway, 67 years old?
That's not a problem. She even had twins. She ended up with twins. Now, the Mefarshim explained, Rashi says really over here, Rashi says, Docha is Bekash. He pushed her off with a straw. In other words, he says, that, you know what? Wait until he becomes bar mitzvah. By then, 6 years, Yehuda thought maybe she'll forget about him. The bottom line is, even though God wanted it differently, but at the present, Yehuda didn't want that his third son maybe will die also. So he says, Kiyama, because Yehuda said, Pen Yamus Gamu Keach, maybe he's going to die like his brothers. But Teilach Tamar, and Tamar went, Vatashe Beisavia, she went with loyalty to her father's house. Now, obviously, her father died already. Shem died. Okay, like we said before, Shem is already dead chronologically. But it means her father's house, meaning to the family. It doesn't mean necessarily her father. Okay, that's basically what the story is. He didn't want her to die. No, because there's a din of a katlonis, that a woman whose husbands die, it shouldn't get married to anybody because she has a chazak of getting her husband's dead.
That's
so
three times.
Yeah, 12. But there's opinions that say even twice. And Yehuda was afraid that it shouldn't happen the third time. Okay, so now Vayir b'hayamim, the days went by. It was in a 22-year period. So seemingly the Mefarshim explained Vayir b'hayamim. It was 12 months later from the incident. The days passed by, but Thomas Bashua Eshes Yehuda. Yehuda's wife died. Okay, so now he lost his wife and two kids. And Yehuda was consoled. You know, he was comforted afterwards. And he went to oversee the cutting of a sheep, you know, the shearing of the wool. Hu v'chira re'eu adulami, him and his friend Chira from Adulam, they went to Timnasa. They went to Timna, which is a city called Timna. We have to learn a few psukim before we can discuss exactly what went on over here.
Who was this partner?
Huh? A friend of his. Whoever, huh?
No one
it doesn't say who it was. Now, they went to Timna. Now, Timna, according to many opinions, is a few miles south of Hebron. So it isn't just in where it is, according to the map. Now, Vayugad l'Tamar Lemer, Tamar was told. And how is Tamar told? Either through prophecy, or the yeshiva of Aver told her, or she heard from gossip. But Vayugad l'Tamar, we find many times in Chumash, when the pasuk says it was told to Tamar, and it doesn't say who told it, it means prophecy. Prophecy told her, or some of Farshim, the simple meaning is, she heard Yehuda was a very popular guy, and she found out that Yehuda came. He went to Timna, Logos Tsene, to shear his wool. Now, there's an interesting question in the Gemara Saita. One place the Gemara says, Shimshon went down to Tamar, to Timna. And here it says, she heard that Yehuda went up to Timna. So the Gemara asks, is Timna up or is it Timna down? Is it higher or is it lower? And the Gemara answers a number of answers. One answer is there's two Timnas. The Timna by Shimshon, when it says he went down, is not the same Timna mentioned over here by Yehuda. Another interpretation is Timna was in the middle of a mountain. If you came from one side of the mountain, you went down. From the other side, you went up. So it depends where you were. Sometimes you went up, sometimes you went down. Another interpretation is, it doesn't mean here physically. Shimshon, you know, that was when he sinned with Dalila, with the whole story, they cut her hair, and they cut his hair, and he lost his powers. So he went down spiritually. Here, Yehuda ended up going up spiritually, because this caused him to eventually marry Tamar, who produced the ancestors of David HaMelech. So it's not talking about the map, so to speak, the geography of its up or down, is basically talking in levels. So she heard that your father-in-law went up to Timna to shear his wool. Now, what happened is as follows. Tamar, because of her greatness, wanted to marry somebody in that family. After all, it was Yaakov's family, it was royalty, Yehuda was royalty. She wanted to marry somebody from the family. And she said, I'm going to get it by hook or by crook. I'm going to get him. Whatever it takes to get them, I'm going to get them. She said, he didn't give me Shayla, the son, I'm going to get him. Okay? Some of Farshim say that she knew and understood in prophecy that she was destined to marry into the family. What did she do? Matar said, "Big day al menusa mi aleha." She took off her widow's garments. First, she took off the widow's garments. Vatechaz batzoif, she covered herself with a veil. Vatesalaf, and she wrapped herself, meaning that not only did she wear a veil, but she did it in a way of covering her face that there was no way Yehuda would recognize her. Okay, what did she do? Vateisha bepesach einayim, she sat in the crossroads, asher al derech Timnasa, which was on the way to Timna, and she sat there, as we'll soon learn, as a zayin, as a prostitute. Why did she do this? And she said, ki rasa, because she saw, and she understood, ki gadol sheila, that sheila was already grown up, v'hila nitna l'elisha, and Yehuda didn't give her to her fair wife. Yehuda didn't let Shayla marry Tamar. So Tamar says, 1 minute, he owes me a debt. Okay, to get married in the family. Now, what happened over here is like this. What does it mean, bepesach einayim? So Rashi's learned the simple meaning of pesach einayim is on the crossroads. Because that's where people travel. So it's like an intersection, you know, that's where a lot of people go in the intersection. Another interpretation is she went Pesach Inayim, she went to Avram Avinu's house. Because Avram Avinu had a tent that was open on all four sides, that people, kept coming, guests. So there's a lot of traffic there. And she knew that if Yehuda is going up to Timna, which is not far from where Avram Avinu lived, he's definitely going to stop in Avram Avinu's inn. So that's why she parked herself over there.
But Avram Avinu was not alive.
I understand, but it seems that his business was still open.
That's why it says Inayim, because it's different.
Yeah. Another, the Pesach Einayim, he brings on the Vartya from the Chiddush Yerim, the first get it, yeah?
Avraham Avinu knew that she's sitting by his tent.
Avraham Avinu wasn't alive anymore.
Right.
He passed away a long, long time before that.
So, who was running the tent?
His CEO.
Holiday.
I wasn't there. No.
So whoever was in charge,
whoever it was,
didn't say, this is a holy place, you shouldn't sit here and do prostitution.
We'll soon see about that. We'll soon see. The Chiddush Yerim says Pesach Einayim simply means, simply Pesach Einayim is by the crosswords. The Chiddush Yerim says, Pesach Einayim, Pesach means opening of eyes. Meaning, she did it with a clear intention. She understood exactly what she was doing. Pesach Einayim means with clear eyes, clear vision, open eyes. She understood the chain of events that's going to come out of her action, to bring Kedush into the world. So it doesn't only mean, what?
How did they get away with it? I don't understand it. How did they get away with consorting to have an heir in this way and it still be holy?
I had a discussion in a class today that I gave about David HaMelech and Bathsheba. A replay of that. Let me make one thing clear. Before Matan Torah, prostitution was not at all, in any way, not right. It was allowed. Before Matan Torah, the Rambam writes, in the first laws of his Sudabi, of the laws of forbidden relations, the Rambam opens up, before Matan Torah, before the laws of marriage were given, and the laws of prostitution were forbidden, that all happened in Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, a guy walked in the street, liked a woman, he lived with her. God forbid, not rape her. Because that was for it. But if they agreed, there was no problem before Matan Torah. There was absolutely nothing wrong with it. After Matan Torah, when the laws of marriage and stability came around, so then it became forbidden. It's forbidden for a man to be a prostitute and for a woman to be a prostitute. It's biblically forbidden. But before Matan Torah, there was absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Why did Yehuda say take her out and burn her?
One second. Everybody's jumping the gun. We'll see why Yehuda maintained she should get killed. But as we'll learn,
she not only was that, but
Yehuda asked her, when Yehuda met with her venture, I'm jumping the gun, are you Jewish? Judaism before Matan Torah, do you believe in God? I believe in God. Are you married? No, I'm single. Did your father marry you off as a child? No. Did you go? Are you pure or neither? Not neither. I'm pure. All these things happened. In other words, Yehuda kept the Torah. So obviously, kept the laws of not marrying goyim and all that. But this level, and as we'll soon learn, I'm really jumping the gun. I know I'm jumping the gun. Yehuda didn't want this to happen. God pushed him into the situation.
How?
We'll soon see. So basically what happened was
but David and Bathsheba, you want to tell us or
no? Okay. Had enough of it today. You know what, I don't want to go into David and Bathsheba, But it's very important to understand concepts. When you're dealing with this bechal, it's a foreign concept to people that don't have a proper understanding of greatness of what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is not, with all due respect, is not like me and you. Okay? A tzaddik, by definition, is one who doesn't have a yetzer hara. A tzaddik, by definition, does not have a yetzer hara. If he has a yetzer hara, he's not a tzaddik, he's a beinoni. A tzaddik is one who kills his yetzer hara, as David HaMelech says, "V'libi chala b'kibi, my heart is hollow within me." The Gemara says he had no yetzer hara. If a person has no yetzer hara, there is no concept of temptation. Before Adam and Chava sinned, the Torah says they were naked. There was no shame. Okay, there was no temptation from nakedness. There was no temptation from any evil, because there was no yetzer hara yet to create that temptation. When Adam Arishan sinned in the Eitz Hadas, he put evil into good and good into evil, and the Eitz Hadas then entered the system. That's when they realized, hey, they don't have clothing on. Okay? Tzaddikim basically have no Eitz Hadas. When you're talking about biblical figures that Torah describes as tzaddikim, I'm not talking about the other people in Torah, but tzaddikim, when you're talking about even a person like Shlomo HaMelech, Shimshon, you know, that all these people, when you watch the movies, there's love affairs going on between, I mean, that's so coarse and so anti any type of sanctity that you're giving the people that don't even have the whole concept of an evil inclination, of temptation. By them, everything had to be what Hashem wanted it to happen. Yehuda's going to walk by Tamar, we're going to see. Yehuda walked by Tamar, he wasn't even interested. He wasn't interested. Hashem wanted him to get to Tamar, so Hashem, it says, Hashem dumped, put into Yehuda a yetzer hara. Hashem, like, put a yetzer hara into him, they should decide to go to her. And even then, he interviewed her first to make sure there was nothing forbidden. But you're not talking about people that have a temptation and they have to fight it and deal with it. It's a whole completely different thing. When you speak about tzaddikim's sins, you're talking not about sins on our coarse, mundane, evil level. You're talking about if a tzaddik is not the level that he should be, if he's good but he's not better, that is called a terrible sin. And I'll give you an example for this. Moshe Rabbeinu's worst sin. What was his worst sin? That Hashem told him, speak to the rock to get the water, and instead he hit the rock and water came down. So God screamed at him, and God said, because you didn't sanctify me, because you didn't, that's what it says in the Pasuk, you didn't sanctify me in the eyes of all the Jews, you're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Now let me ask you a question. The last time I heard, if somebody hits a rock, okay, and water comes out, trust me, it's a miracle. Yeah? Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock. Hashem said, speak to the rock. But what did he do? He hit the rock. Yeah? And water came out. Right? God didn't say to him, hey, what did you do? I told you to... God, you know what God said to him? You didn't sanctify me. What do you mean you didn't sanctify me? Hitting the rock, producing water is not a sanctification. Who else can do it, if not Hashem? Why is Hashem screaming at Moshe, you failed to sanctify me? He could have said, you didn't do it as much. Obviously, speaking to a rock would have made a greater sanctification of God's name than hitting the rock. Yeah? But between me and you, if somebody speaks to a rock and water comes out, or hits the rock and water comes out, is there a real big difference? There isn't such a big difference. But and Hashem wanted there should be a greater sanctification. I didn't even hit the rock. I just spoke to it and already listened. Yeah? What did Hashem tell Moshe? You failed to sanctify me, and therefore you're going to be punished with the ultimate punishment for Moshe. No Israel. No Eretz Yisrael. Whatever expression is this? What did he do wrong? He didn't sanctify God. He did sanctify God. But by a tzaddik, if you could be on a higher level, you know, and you're only on the second level, not you're bad, but if you're on the second level instead of the top level, you are awful and horrible and massive punishment. Okay? That's the story with David and Bathsheba, without going into all the zillions of details, by the way, because if you elaborate on the story, you see the way David and Malach really didn't do anything wrong. And that's the story with Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's the story here with Yehuda and Tamar. It's not that Yehuda had a desire to be with Azaina, and even though it was permitted. The interesting thing is, prostitution before Matan Torah was absolutely not wrong. It was not any worse than marrying a girl. That was it. It wasn't forbidden. And as we see, what came from this? David HaMelech, Mashiach, you know, all the things that we learned. So it's not, you know, people say, hey, what are you justifying these guys in Chumash for to make them look holy? It's not a justification, it's a reality. These people had no Yetzer Hara. They were great. They were prophets. God revealed himself to them. God, I mean, they were attached to God. They didn't do things wrong. So was a sanctification, could have been more sanctification.
So are there more sodoms in the world today than there was then, or more then than there is today?
Well, according to my last check, there were much more then than now.
Or is it that we don't know?
Trust me, there were more then than now.
He couldn't even see her.
Huh?
He was so covered up that he couldn't.
I understand, but he understood she had to be a Zayin, if not, she wouldn't be sitting there.
Was there a point when it did stop?
What?
With the Sadiqs.
Every generation has at least one.
At least one only.
Yeah.
But then they
I'll tell you a little secret, it's not me. Okay.
You're a sadiq. Don't compare yourself to the rabbi.
Rabbi, if you put up with us, you're a sadiq.
Don't you put up with me, you're a bigger sadiq.
He's a sadiq.
Okay, according to the Medrash, like we'll soon see, that when Yehuda walked by, he saw her as a zayna, he just kept going. Like it says, he thought she was a Zayna, and it says, Ki chisisapanel. Why? Why did he think she was a Zayna? So Rashi says, because she was so great, she was so modest in her father-in-law's house, Yehuda never even recognized her. Rashi says that she covered her face, sign of modesty, that her face. Since she had covered her face all the while she lived in her father-in-law's house, she was a modest woman. So Yehuda could have never dreamt that this Zayna, this prostitute, should be Tom. Okay, so what happened is, Yehuda thinks she's a Zayna because her face was covered. He left his path to go to her. And we'll soon see that, as the Medrash says, Providence forced him to her. Let's read it. I'm going to read the Medrash in English. Yehuda ignored her and proceeded on his way, but Tamar prayed, Sovereign of the universe, meaning God, shall be deprived of an offspring from this righteous man. Tamar davened Hashem, why is he leaving me? I want to marry this guy. Hashem sent the angel of desire to appear before Yehuda and say to him, Where are you going, Yehuda? If you run away, where will kings come from? From where else will redeemers arise? So Yehuda detoured to her by the road, despite himself and against his wish. Then the Gemara says, that's the Medrash. Then the Gemara says in Saita, this we learn every year in Saita, there was a discussion going on between Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda says to her, Are you perhaps a pagan, meaning idol worshipper? No, I'm a proselyte, meaning I believe in one God. Are you married? I'm unmarried. And therefore I can marry, I'm free. Perhaps your father accepted marriage on your behalf? No, I'm an orphan. Okay? Then it says, perhaps you're unclean, impure, in a cycle. So she answered, I'm clean. This is the, because Yehuda, all of a sudden, the angel is pushing him, so to speak, to go to her, and he says, what's going off over here? Okay, so he says, Vayermen, he said, let me come to you, because he didn't know, he that it was his daughter-in-law, because he would have not spoken to her for him, he would have spoken to her to marry Shelah, to marry the third son. Okay, now why didn't he recognize her? He didn't recognize her voice. I mean, just think about it. He didn't recognize his voice. Hashem didn't want him to recognize it. Because if Yehuda recognized Tamar, he would have said, Tamar, go marry Shelah. And destiny had it that Hashem wanted Yehuda to marry Tamar.
He wouldn't say go marry Shelah.
He would have.
No, he wouldn't.
At this time, he would have already.
Why?
Because according to Halacha, Shelah should have gone first to do the mitzvah
but
of Yibam.
But he had decided not to because he was worried he would die.
Right, but now that he saw destiny is making it, that where is King's going to come from? Where is Mashiach going to come from? So you know it had to be. But he would have given it to Shelah first. Okay. So, she was a very smart woman. She said, and she said to him, Matitani, what are you going to give me? What are you going to pay me? Kisava Ela, that you're going to come to me. And now I want payment. Okay? Vayemer, and he said, Anecha Shalach Gdi Izim Minatzein, I'll send you a kid from the goats. Vatayim, and she says, fine. Imtitein Eravin Atshol Checha. You have to leave me security. Collateral. I don't trust you. She didn't say, I don't trust you. But what? This is all part of the plan. She didn't want Yehuda to know now. She wanted to see how destiny is going to make it happen if she gets pregnant or not. And the whole story will unfold and then she'll be able to know how to play her cards, so to speak, how to play her hand. So he said, it was basically, the Mefarshim say, that in the olden times, such a gift was a very prominent gift. You find that Yishai sent David HaMelech to Shaul. He wanted to give him a gift. He sent him with a goat. B'chal was done a very prominent thing. Okay.
I had one question that we were waiting for.
What?
Is there a man? I just forgot it. But you said it later on.
Remind me, good. If not, I don't remember. Okay, so she said to him, you have to give me a security until it happens. But Yerman, he says, what can I give you? Okay, what can I give you as a security? So she said to him three things. Chesamcha, your signet ring, you know, they used to have these rings of seals. Upsilecha, your wrap. Umatcha, shebi yodecha, and the staff that's in your hand. And the Mefarshim explain, these are the three things that made Yehuda, so to speak, a leader. The signet ring, the stick, you know, the scepter, these are the things that made people leaders. So she wanted, and as the Mefarshim point out, she didn't need money for this prostitution because she wanted to marry Yehuda. It wasn't an act of prostitution on her side. She wanted to marry, so she didn't want payment, but she wanted a pledge from Yehuda that this is happening. That it's really going to happen. Vayitan la, he gave it to her. Vayave yalau, he came to her. Vatana, and she became pregnant. Now it says, Vatar lay. Normally, a man doesn't make a woman pregnant for one time. But here, a special miracle happened, so to speak, that Hashem made it happen even after the first time. Okay, then she got up. The pasuk says, "Vatakim v'teilach." She got up and left. Vatasit si'ifa me'alau. She removed the veil from herself. Vatelbash bigdei al menusa. What'd she do? The show was over. So she got She left. Okay? She went back home, back with her widow's clothing. What is she? Yehuda was going to send her the gift, right? Yehuda was going, but she wouldn't be there because she didn't want his money. She didn't want the goat. She wanted to prove a point to Yehuda that you have to stay married to me. But Yishlach Yehuda, so Yehuda said, sent as Gedir Yehizim the goat, Biadreu Adulami in the friend the Adulamite, the Kacha Seirovim Miyado Isha. To take back the security from the girl, you know, the ring and the stick. For they matzah, they didn't find the woman. Because obviously Tamar left. And they asked the people from the city, and they said to them, where is this prostitute that was sitting on the crossroads? And they said, there's no prostitute here. It's an interesting thing. The Mefarshim learn here two ways. Number one, the people said, we are a moral country. There is never prostitution here. And other Mephoshim learn much deeper what they said to him, what the Torah is saying to him, it was not an act of prostitution. It was an act of legal responsibility that Yehuda had to tell him. It was not prostitution. The simple meaning of the pasuk is, there's no prostitutes here. We're a moral country.
But we defined it as something that's not immoral.
Correct.
What if people didn't
but,
see her?
But they say they were
extra
careful. What?
The people didn't see her as a prostitute.
So right.
A woman.
That's what they said. There was never a prostitute there. Or some Mefarshim in Lahesa Bazek Kadesha. In this act of what you did, there was no immoral act over here. It was prostitution. Okay, Vayomer Yehuda, so Yehuda said, Tikach lo, let her keep them. Paniya lavuz, thus you will become a laughing stock. Because everybody's gonna laugh at us.
Wasn't he worried about asking about the Kedesha?
Oh, so that's why the Abarbanel learns, I was about to say this, that's why the Abarbanel learns, Yehuda said, let's get out of here and stop asking about prostitutes. I mean, it's like starting to look, where's the prostitute? You know, so Yehuda says, let's forget it. Let her keep it as a pledge. We'll make it more known to our disgrace. And what I have to do, I pledged her, I sent her, and she doesn't want. Tough luck.
And you didn't care about the
second. And Davin learns a different thing. Davin learns that the laughing would be from the fact that Yehuda gave her such prominent security. Signet ring, the staff, that showed the whole person was the ring. You know, when you had the seal of the king, you could do whatever you want with it.
How was it that she took part of them anyway? How did she run away?
She left.
She
went back home.
I know, but...
Oh,
he fell asleep?
I see, he ran away.
No, in the morning he left, and that was it. And she left.
I remember the story.
She went to get coffee, she never came back.
She went to Starbucks. Okay, and Yehuda said, "Shalachti agdi azeh, behold, I sent this kid, meaning I did my commitment, v'atalei mitzos, and you didn't find it." So Rashi says, Yehuda is punished deed for deed. How did Yehuda tell Yaakov Yosef was dead? They shechted a goat, right? And they sent to put the coat into the blood, and they sent him, hey, this is what we found. So what did they use to trick Yaakov? A goat. So what did Tamar use to trick him? Also a goat. Because he sent a goat, and she made a laughing stock out of him that, hey, there's no such person here. So Hashem punished Yehuda with the same way he was punished. The Rambam in Meir Nevuchim, the quote over here, the Rambam in Meir Nevuchim brings out an interesting lesson in moral conduct. Even though before Matan Torah was not forbidden, even though technically Yehuda, the security Yehuda gave was worth more than the goat, in value, it was much worth much more than the goat. Nevertheless, to discuss sexual issues in public, even though it was allowed, was improper for people to do. It was improper for people to do, even though it was allowed. In other words, to give an example, just because a husband and wife are allowed, permitted in certain conducts, it doesn't mean they should do it in the street. You know what I mean? It's certain, even though it's allowed, it's nothing wrong, you know, with doing hugging and kissing in the street if it's your wife and she's not needed and so on. Technically, there's nothing wrong, but it's still not proper. And this is what Yehuda is teaching us from this incident. He was willing to give up his ring, his stick, and everything. And what he really could have done is, as far as he's concerned, we could have started asking more details. Where's this lady? And where's this, you know? Even though it was nothing wrong, it was everything kosher. It was nothing illegal with it. But the Rambam and Meir Nevuchim emphasizes it's still not moral, proper conduct to talk about these things in public. You know, that's good for the bedroom. It's not good for other places. And that's why we see Yehuda was willing to give up all these things, not just, and he says, we don't want to start asking about it, let her keep it and forget it.
Wasn't any one of these things more valuable than a sheep, than a goat?
They were.
Why did he give three? He should have just given one.
To him,
just a ring or a scepter.
She probably wanted all three. She probably wanted all three.
To have real proof.
Real proof. The Medrash says, Yehuda says, we're going to become laughing stock. Chida, his friend, didn't do anything wrong. Why are we going to become laughing stock? So the Medrash quotes a famous statement that says, if you show me someone's friends, I'll tell you what he is like. If you want to know who somebody is, find out who their friends are and you'll know who the person is. So Yehuda says, if you're my friend, you're in the same boat I am. In other words, if I become a laughing stock, they're going to know you're also laughing, the same type of person, and you'll also become a laughing stock. So that's why Yehuda said, we will become laughing, and let's get out of here.
And if they have no friends? If they have no friends? It says if you want to know who they are, then check out their friends.
Yeah.
If the guy has no friends, he's a loner.
Then you know for sure who he is. Then you know for sure who he is. Okay, to be continued.